As widely expected, the SARB's MPC erred on the side of caution today and kept rates on hold. In the run-up to the announcement, analysts were largely expecting the tone of the address to be decidedly more dovish. Nikki Weimer, senior economist at Nedbank, Isaiah Mhlanga, executive chief economist at Alexander Forbes, and Kevin Lings, chief economist at Standard, all joined me at the desk this afternoon to unpack that decision. And I kicked off the discussion by asking Isaiah whether Governor Netanyahu's tone was dovish enough. Here's that conversation.
Yeah, I think it was very, very dovish. The one thing that stood out was the very last statement in terms of their willingness to push inflation expectations towards 4.5%. And currently they're still at about 5% in 2020, 5.1% in 2021, which is still a little bit higher than where they want to push it. But in terms of all the other factors which they considered, they would have supported their rate cut.
Mm-hmm. But are you surprised, Nikki, that we have now the dot plot having changed somewhat? Initially, a cut having been anticipated at some point this year, now none on the agenda. And I don't know if the governor's response at the end was sufficient enough in saying that because we saw a cut in July, it takes any further cuts off the table for now.
Yeah, kind of. If they didn't update anything, it probably would have. But given that you're assuming that they did update all their numbers, you're starting from a new starting point. Yes, it is a bit surprising because I think the person who asked the question made a valid point, saying, you didn't change inflation forecast much. Did change your growth forecast quite a bit. You now have a flat scenario, and it does appear to be actually a more favorable, a weaker growth picture. Mm-hmm. And now there's no cut on the horizon. So it is a bit strange.
Let's take a look at this.
I thought they would have alluded to the possibility of a cut down the line. Because if you look at
As soon as November,
I would have thought that would have played out in the statement. Because if you look at all the parameters he was talking about, the growth rate, the inflation expectations, all of the parameters you would say would have justified a cut. In fact, as he was going through the speech, you were kind of getting a sense that perhaps you can get an interest rate cut here. So to me, it's not the conclusion that they didn't cut. It's that they didn't seem to allude to further cuts ahead that I would say is quite surprising given the environment we're in.
And I want to just draw emphasis to that environment and some of the parameters that have shifted, because inflation and that outlook largely unchanged, but GDP forecast, yes, sitting stable at 0.6% for this year. It's next year in 2020 that you've got to worry about, with that having decreased now to 1.8%.
That's right. So that's a meaningful reduction, and we know that interest rates work with a lag. So you would say he could have provided some support from a growth perspective into next year, or indicated that that's entirely possible. And while, yes, I agree that interest rates are not the reason we're not growing, every cut in interest rates nevertheless does help to some extent, even if it's just relieving the pressure. I think that there's an inconsistency with the kind of data that he's talking about and the overall tone that he comes up with through the speech. It doesn't feel like it's consistent, which I would have thought not an interest rate cut now, but one in November. After this discussion, I'll be kind of questioning whether we even get the cut in November. You could argue that it was the risk parameters that we still don't know, the credit rating, the medium-term budget, and that if we get past those factors and we're still in this favorable position, then you would expect a cut. So perhaps he's just being very conservative and not wanting to show his hand. In case there's an expectation of a cut in November, the Moody's rating goes against us and he can't fulfill that expectation. That's hard to judge. But on the face of it, it's a little inconsistent, the tone versus the actual data.
Yeah. But I guess there are also other things that we need to consider. Electricity prices, food price inflation is trickling up, and fuel prices as well. Those may experience some shocks which may push inflation a little bit up. Historical inflation, as the governor said, it means nothing for monetary policy. It's about their projected inflation. But also there could be a communication to their colleagues at Treasury to say monetary policy is not going to come and save economic growth. You need to do the structural reforms that are required. And as a result, we are going to take a neutral stance in terms of what is expected so that you do your job of doing the structural reform that can lift economic
growth. In fact, the governor wouldn't be lured into any specific commentary around the finance minister's latest document release, where some structural reform that's needed has been put on the table, pointing to the fact that they've been saying this for a long time, and he's just glad someone's listening.
Yes. I mean, certainly if you look at Treasury's document, there is an aim to deal with the key issues that everyone, every business association, virtually every economist, analyst, IMF, the World Bank, all of those issues are addressed. An attempt is made to address it and then to go a little bit further and, pick some of those low-hanging fruits that could maybe offer opportunities like, broad spectrum, making more spectrum available, those sorts of things. So I think that's important. But I think from the Reserve Bank perspective, what I read into this is that they're putting quite a lot of weight. This caution in terms of it is a dovish statement because inflation is contained, growth is weaker. But the caution you see in their actions, and certainly in the QPM, seems to suggest that they've put a lot of weight on what could potentially happen to the rand, how these fiscal metrics will play out, which is incredibly uncertain, and then what Moody's will do. Frankly, by this time, I think at this point, none of us know. I mean, there was a stage the markets were, in my opinion, rapidly pricing in the possibility of a downgrade, especially just after the additional bailout was given to Eskom. And then we had the Moody's conference, and they seemed surprisingly, almost bizarrely confident in our government finances. And now it seems to be reversing. Plus, you've got the global momentum where interest rates are coming down, which always makes it easier on the rand to a large extent.
Yeah.
So they clearly are very uncertain about this, as we all are, and they must be putting quite a lot of weight on that in their models and in their thinking. And that's why they're having this very stable approach.
So it feels like a wait and see. Mm. In the end, when you digest this, it's we're waiting and seeing how this thing pans out.
Especially
you can call it data dependent, but I don't think it's data dependent. Mm. The data is clear. Yeah. You can cut rates. The wait and see is, are we going to pick up some more volatility and uncertainty around policy and currency? We know that internationally interest rates are low and are going to remain low. And as Nikki said, that opens the opportunity for us to lower rates. Mm-hmm. To me, this is we're waiting for the next couple of weeks and see how policy unfolds in South Africa.
Especially where you've got this big fiscal risk that's the cloud hanging over the South African economy. I want to pick up on a debate that's been raging on Twitter, some questioning the function around the SARB and putting Eskom at the forefront, saying that for 2019-2020, Eskom is set to pay 84 billion rand in debt servicing costs. And the SARB saying that even if the Reserve Bank was to lend money to Eskom, interest would still be payable, that you can't do an abracadabra with debt. So the question some of the members of the public are asking is, who is the SARB actually serving right now? That on the one side. On the other side, is the issue not simply around the fact that as soon as the SARB ventures down this path, it amounts to the manipulation of money supply to fund the mismanagement of the national fiscus? And that's the slope the SARB's
going to I wouldn't want to advocate the Reserve Bank getting involved in the funding of state-owned enterprises.
Absolutely.
I think that's a slippery slope, and I think there's all kinds of ways in which that can be manipulated in a really bad way. And I think it sends the wrong message with regards to the financial management of these entities. I think there are much better ways to deal with it. Eskom can be restructured. The SOEs can be dealt with financially. I think there are better ways, longer-term solutions to deal with that. Yes, it may require some short-term pain in terms of unbundling Eskom, selling assets, etc. But to me, that's a much more sustainable route. Mm. Then trying to coerce or convince the Reserve Bank to get involved. I don't see it as necessary, and I don't see it as the Reserve Bank's job. And I think that if we then ventured in that route, we would quickly end up with, do we need to do quantitative easing? And before we know it, we're printing money for the hell of it. Very dangerous in a South African context. I think they're much better, more sensible solutions.
And of course, Nikki Weimar, Senior Economist at Nedbank, Isaiah Mhlanga, Executive Chief Economist at Alexander Forbes, and Kevin Lings, Chief Economist at Stanlib.